you need to pay attention in the moment when you get that fan letter from a reader, or when you have a young couple show up to your book event talking about their decision not to have kids and how much it means to have a book about that subject that they can then share with their family members. Those moments, every single human who's been impacted by every single book, I tell my authors to pay attention.
Welcome to Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA. This podcast is brought to you by the Independent Book Publishers Association at ibpa-online.org. I'm your host, Peter Goodman, and today we are talking with Laura Stanfill. Laura is the publisher of Forest Avenue Press, which she founded in 2012, and she earned a certificate from the Yale Publishing Course in 2018 thanks to an IBPA scholarship. And as she mentioned to me in her letter, she said she believes in indie bookstores and wishes on them like stars. So welcome, Laura.
Thanks, Peter. I'm glad to be here today.
I'm really glad you decided to make time to talk to me today. And I really wanted to talk to you because you are one of the most energetic small publishers I know. And it seems like you are always out there promoting, appearing, teaching, and I suspect you're really one reason why little old Portland, Oregon, in recent years has become a real energy center of independent publishing and bookselling. And of course, Powell's Bookstore has been there for a long time, and that in itself is a very huge energy locus. But as we all know, in the last month, things have really changed with the COVID-19 virus. But before we get into that, could you tell me a little bit about Forest Avenue Press and yourself?
Absolutely. I started my press having no sense of what publishing was. I came from the journalism side of things, and of course, I've always been a reader, and I was a freelance manuscript editor and a publicist for a while before that as well. And I really credit this community here in Portland, literary community, for inspiring me to start my own press. I saw so many other small press publishers doing really incredible work, and I thought, well, maybe I can do it too. Maybe I can join them. And so when I started back in 2012, a number of local authors and publishers reached out their hands and offered to answer my questions and help me figure my way into the industry. And we definitely started off as a regional press, and in 2014, we signed with what is now Publishers Group West for national distribution. So the company has been growing ever since, and it's remained, from the very beginning, we've been all about independent bookstores. We actually were founded around the Powell's. At the time, Powell's had an espresso book machine, and I thought, how cool would it be to print a book, to publish a book inside a bookstore? So we started really grassroots, definitely tied to the independent bookstore community here in Portland, and we've remained that. Certainly, we changed our methods and our printing model and our business model since those early days, but we've always been about bringing readers and authors, booksellers together in spaces.
Portland itself was kind of very very key to your starting out, as you said. And is that still pretty much the case when you're launching a book? You are kind of working locally with the booksellers there to generate publicity and enthusiasm.
Absolutely, they've been our. Really, the key to our success has been independent bookstores in the Pacific Northwest. And I would add the Pacific Northwest Booksellers Association has also been key. We've been regular attendees of their trade show for many years now. And the support we've received from Northwest booksellers has been instrumental in building our brand and allowing us to be solvent and really to help our readers find our books. We couldn't do it without our booksellers.
So specifically, when a book was about to launch, in what ways were you engaging with the local booksellers there?
In advance, we would attend the trade show, give away a lot of advance copies, solicit blurbs from booksellers we thought might like the title. And then certainly we've always been very big on events, bringing bringing people together in communities where it makes sense, in bookstores where it makes sense, where the author had a lot of community and we knew we would have a strong audience to support the bookstore. So its rollout in advance was definitely about reaching out beforehand and giving tools and data to our PGW sales team. And then once the launch occurred, rolling through other events at other bookstores.
So were you generally favoring authors with Pacific Northwest connections?
We've gone back and forth. I would say we're probably still about 75% Pacific Northwest and maybe even 80%. We do really well with Northwest authors and titles because of that in-person connection with the booksellers we have in this region. But we certainly have authors in other parts of the country. Our Spring 2020 one author, Beth Kephart, lives in Pennsylvania, for instance.
And how important was Powell's to what you were doing?
Essential. Powell's has been a number one champion of our press. Many of our titles have hit the Powell's bestseller list, not just the small press bestseller list, but the main store. We've been very fortunate to develop relationships with a number of booksellers who have added our books to different lists and written shelf talkers for them and placed them face out. We've definitely benefited in many, many ways from support from Powell's. And because they're such a national force, having Powell's support for our books has definitely helped their national sales as well.
Right. That was a very smart strategy. Did it take you a long time to weasel your way into their good graces?
You know, it's such a different bookstore than so many smaller bookstores. And so how it operates is took a while to understand. But really, it started with knowing one person and then knowing another person and knowing another person and continuing to shop at the stores and read shelf talkers and stop by the info desks to say hi. It was very much a one-by-one effort. Although I have to add that our graphic designer, cover designer from the beginning has been up until recently in the marketing department at Powell's. So she and I helped, she helped me create a company that, and the type, the look of our books specifically for customers at Powell's and other independent bookstores.
And you were using their espresso machine. Do they still have it?
No, they don't. It's been gone for years now.
What a shame.
Yeah, it was too bad.
How are you using it? You were, I think I saw you up in Portland a couple of years ago, and you said that you were using it to print copies for an event, I think, like kind of local, locally themed copies.
Yeah, we did that early on, and we also did some early galleys with the espresso book machine as well, because it was just such a nice way to support an independent bookstore, and it was fun for our authors to be able to go to the machine and watch their book get printed out.
Yeah,
sounds
like a lot of fun, too. Too bad they got rid of the machine. And I'm always hoping for an espresso renaissance. But anyway, that's another story. So there was Portland. It was a great town to be a publisher in. Things have changed in the last month. What's happening up there now?
I think everyone's feeling pretty gutted. I am usually an optimist, and I'm having a hard time doing the tasks of publishing because I know, for instance, we have advanced copies printing now or in the queue to be printed for Joanna Rose's second novel, A Small Crowd of Strangers. And she is a longtime Portland bookseller. In fact, she worked for Powell's years ago. And I've been super excited to get these advanced copies to bookseller friends. But with the Powell's layoff and other local bookstores either completely closed or doing online orders only, or some of them are doing drive-by pickup, and a few are even doing delivery within the local area. But I don't know who I'm going to send these books to because I don't want to go to the post office.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And my friends, everybody at Powell's, all of my friends were permanently laid off. There's a callback list. So hopefully if Powell's continues to gain traction online and is able to open again, people will get recalled. And so there's hope, but it also feels completely devastating to be part of a community that is so much about getting together in person
right.
and have to think about what our future is going to look like, because we've always been about let's get together, let's be with each other in public spaces. I mean, by we, I mean Forest Avenue, but even before I came onto the scene, writers and readers were always connecting at Powell's and Broadway Books and Annie Bloom's and a Children's Place and another read-through. And now we don't have that.
There was an article in, I believe it was Publishers Weekly this morning. Well, there were two. There was one about what American booksellers are doing to kind of fight back. There was another very interesting one about how the publishers in Europe are petitioning the European Commission for all sorts of different relief measures. And behind it all was their very explicit statement that bookstores have been basically the center of gathering. It's where culture develops and where culture thrives. And to take that out of society is a blow to the basically to society's mental health. And so they're trying to get themselves declared as essential businesses. I see that in I believe in Washington State they're making that same sort of petition. Is the same thing happening in Oregon? Are booksellers open in any way for business except for just doing online deliveries?
Booksellers are open, but I believe nobody is allowed to go into the stores except for employees. And so I think everybody's handling it a little bit differently. Annie Bloom's is local to my area, and they will send a bookseller out to deliver a book within 2 miles of the store. They also have been doing mail order. Broadway Books has been doing curbside delivery. Mm-hmm. I believe Children's Place, which is a local children's bookstore, is also doing that. Powell's at this point is online only.
Where does this leave you as a publisher, particularly a publisher with a bunch of new titles, not simply coming out in fall, but coming out right around now? Are you planning things like virtual tours? You working with your social media to build up your community and generate demand? I mean, because demand, it looks like, can still be fulfilled through distributors, wholesalers, bookstores, et cetera. Readers can get books.
Absolutely.
They can get ebooks for that matter, which, and I'm sure you've heard that ebooks have had a tremendous surge in sales. Not surprising there. So there are books to be sold, but the question, as always, is how do you connect with the readers?
And that's a question for our spring title. I have no idea. And for our fall title, I have hopes, but I don't know. But let me back up and tell you about the title that's coming out now. Romeza Coya's debut novel, The Royal Abduls, is set in post-9/11 Washington, D.C., and it's about a secular Muslim Indian-American family. And Romeza has terminal cancer. Her book comes out officially May 12th, but due to her illness, we worked really closely with the local literary community to get her books on the shelves at Annie Bloom's, Broadway Books, and Powell's in advance of May, because we wanted her to be able to see her books on the shelf, and we wanted people to be able to walk into the store and get copies. And through a vast team effort, we were able to make that happen. We actually went to press in December for our May book, and by February, they were popping up on local stores only. Publishers Group West worked with us to release those orders early so we could fulfill this dream. We also got a March 15th Powell's downtown store event for Romeza. And that was a Sunday. And Thursday of that week, as the prognosis for the country was looking more and more like everything needed to be shut down for public health, Romeza and I talked on the phone and said, let's shut this down. Let's not do it. So the initial launch was supposed to be in March, just regionally, followed by May. And I haven't wrapped my arms around what May would look like, especially if she's not here to celebrate with us. Hopefully she will be. But my March plan was already an emergency backup plan. And when we decided to cancel, Powell's is very understanding. And within a couple hours, the store put out a call that they were going to cancel all events through April. And since then, of course, as you've talked about, they've closed entirely. And they did lay off staff. So on March 15th, for lack of a better plan, I was totally stymied. I knew it was the right decision. I'm really thrilled we had the agency to make a decision as a literary community leader that we were not going to risk people, especially our immunocompromised author, by bringing people together at this time. And I feel really glad we got to make that decision and stand by it.
Sure. What else could you do?
But yeah. That left the question of, well, now what? Because we had all pitched in together to make this happen for her. And so on Sunday, March 15th at 2 o'clock, thanks to my friends Liz Prado and Jackie Shannon Hollis, we created an idea of doing an online launch. And we invited people privately to share a photo of the book, share a picture of the few hours Ramiz's name was on the marquee. I happened to run down. We canceled the event. I ran down to Powell's and took a few photos. That was the last time I was out in public, just so we could have them. And so people shared those. People shared memories of Ramiz. People shared their reviews or the copies that they had already gotten from the local bookstores with pretty flowers next to them. And we also, with gloves on, my author Joanna Rose and I arrived at Ramiz's door and handed her a case of her finished books and flowers. So that's how we celebrated. Uh-huh. What do I do for May when it is available for the rest of the world? I don't know.
And I guess the other issue is that those things that happen online, they're ephemeral.
Yep.
They happen.
It's gone. Launch is over. Yeah.
So you want to be able to preserve it. It's not like the book is on a shelf waiting for people to pop by and say, oh, yes, I saw that. It's a matter of trying to keep it at the forefront of everyone's attention. And now, of course, everyone is looking to do the same thing, creating virtual communities, social media marketing, et cetera, et cetera. It's kind of a good thing in a sense for independent publishers because all this online virtual communitizing was just it was happening, it was percolating along, but this gives it a big jump start. And I suppose what that means is that the tools are there, the receptive market is there, but now everyone is doing it, and it's small publishers trying to fight for breath in a large yep. ocean. And no doubt the large New York publishers who are well-funded, huge staffs, they're looking at this sort of thing too, and they own most of the eyeballs, and we're constantly trying to think of how we can get them back for ourselves.
Absolutely, and that's nothing that has been a priority for me. My priority right. As a business person has always been about the in-person community. That being said, something also incredible that has happened around Ramiz's launch is the Pacific Northwest Booksellers Association created a campaign to get her bookseller reviews and books and Pacific Northwest author reviews. And so the week of the launch, before it got canceled, they ran this wonderful campaign on their Northwest Book Lovers website featuring quotes from many people in the community talking about the Royal Abduls and why this story is essential. It's a story of immigration and identity, and it feels so important right now in the history of our country to be talking about the effects of racism and the effects of ignorance. And that, to me, seemed like the first burst of hope I had about how we as independent small presses can rally together and continue to rally together with other with booksellers and other presses and other authors online, just to see that welling of community support. I don't know how we will compete, of course, with the people who have the big budgets and the huge design departments. I mean, it's just me with my computer.
Well, you know, I mean, one of the things I was thinking about and have been thinking about the last couple of days is how this is going to fundamentally change book selling and publishing. And from what you're saying, you've got a book there that actually seems perfectly poised to do well. It is attention getting on its very face, and I'm sure it benefits by being a good book to boot. So it's something you really put your time in. But can you imagine having five or six books that you have to do the same thing with at the same time? And maybe what it means is that we are going to reduce down and really only deal with the books that can that we truly believe in, that are truly exceptional, they're very timely, and that we can put this kind of effort in, knowing that we're on the other end, we're going to get a wonderful reception from the books, from the book community and the reading public.
That's been my business model from the beginning. I do 2 or 3 titles a year, and it's there are wonderful things about it, and those things include building community relationships, having the time and the dollars to really push advanced copies out there and really stand behind the author. The personal connections I've made with my authors by really focusing on one at a time have been extraordinary, and they've been life-changing for me, for sure. Certainly, many of the authors I work with are debuts, and so I think the experience has probably been life-changing for them, having their first book in the world and riding the crests and the troughs of the waves of what it's like to take your art public. But it's also very risky, because if you put your time and attention into one book, that still doesn't solve the problem of eyeballs and who's going to find it. I mean, you can put more resources into one book and hope that they come back out. But if you choose wrong, and you know, I taught at Portland State last term in book editing, and I remember there was a statistic about how X number of every book fails, and how as publishers we just have to roll with that. In this type of business model, you can't get away with that. You have to have books that succeed, and you have to have books that backlist really well. And that's been where we finally have reached. We'll be 8 years old in June, and from when the first book project got started. And you know, I don't know. I don't know if this is sustainable for anybody else. And I don't know if it's sustainable for me anymore, because I've relied so much on people walking into independent bookstores and seeing our amazing Gigi Little covers and the underrepresented voices we're sharing and getting excited about picking up a book. We're not really geared to be online like this. It's not what I wanted.
Right.
Not what a lot of us want, probably.
I don't think anyone wanted it, but I think if we look at the trends of these pandemics and the way they spread, we do know that at some point it's going to be over, and there's no point in giving up before that. I'm glad to,
suppose you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly when, but I'm sure it will pass, and it sounds like you're pretty well poised to be there on the other side. And
you know,
have a lot of books
the one
available.
I hope so. The one thing I keep thinking about is how, when I work with my authors, I always ask them to read, and this is maybe something good for all of us as publishers right now. I always tell my authors they need to redefine success, because how we were raised to look at the book world, to look at what it means to be a quote-unquote author, not all of it is happening the same way as it did 20 years ago or 40 years ago. It's certainly the whole industry, there are a lot of things that have been the same, and there are a lot of things that have changed in recent years. But overwhelmingly, authors expect, especially if they haven't talked to other authors much, they expect certain things from their books and from their publishers. And I always tell them, yes, we can put a pin in that goal, we can aim for that goal, but let's also admire every step along the way, and let's celebrate every step along the way. So what if your book doesn't win an award? It's okay, but you need to pay attention in the moment when you get that fan letter from a reader, or when you have a young couple show up to your book event talking about their decision not to have kids and how much it means to have a book about that subject that they can then share with their family members. Those moments, every single human who's been impacted by every single book, I tell my authors to pay attention. And maybe that's the silver lining. We are all housebound right now, and yes, we're panicking. I mean, I have high anxiety, and I spend a lot of my day trying to not panic, but we are also engaging emotionally, and with time we have available, we're engaging in ways that maybe we were too busy as a society to engage before. And that, to me, might be hopeful if we can pull back and say, yes, this email from a reader matters. Yes, this is a sign of success. My author has, Julia Stoops, has an interview on KBOO, the local radio station, coming up tomorrow. And to me, that was a huge blast of hope that the that Ken Jones, the interviewer, said, let's do this anyway. Let's do this online. And let's, I think they did it digitally through Skype. And they had the interview, and the interview is going to actually run on the radio. It's, in a normal course of business, it's another author interview, and I would be excited, and I would share it. But now, knowing it's happening in these times makes me think, okay, I'm going to count this as a huge success. And if we can step back about thinking about all the other stuff that can't happen, all the book tours that are canceled, and just admire and sit with the things that are happening, I don't know. It's a start toward optimism.
That's fantastic. Very inspiring. I'm going to go back to my my work today with renewed energy and really savor these small victories that, as you say, might otherwise have just passed under my attention. I was too busy thinking about something else that was going to happen in the future. Well, thank you, Laura. I hope for the best for Forest Avenue Press. I'm sure we're going to get through the other side, and hearing you talk about what you're doing has been really fantastic. I really appreciate your sharing your story with us.
I think it's really important, Peter, to have conversations like these as an industry right now, especially right now, and to be honest with each other and speak from the heart, and also to say, I don't know, because there's so much that none of us knows. So I'm so appreciative that you invited me on this show today. Thank you so much for your time.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much, Laura.
Have a great day.
Thanks again to Laura Stanfill, Forest Avenue Press, and thanks again to you for listening. Now, I've put links in the website notes to Forest Avenue and some of the stores and associations mentioned in the podcast. In these confusing times, it's really refreshing to hear Laura's take. The world is upside down, future is uncertain, but there are still small victories to be won, and still a community of readers that are hungry for content, inspiration, and connections. So for just a moment, let's celebrate us, the independent publishers. Publishers who believe in the books they publish, like Laura, and are so committed to their success that they upend schedules and even get pals to put their event on the marquee, all to deliver a personal and meaningful gift to an ailing author. Well, these are the kinds of publishers that will outlast just about any kind of disruption and retail chaos. I assume that when we come out the other side, Laura and the many dedicated publishers like her will be there too, waiting to share lots of amazing new books and authors. So savor the small victories and store them up to get through the tough times so we're ready to go when we're all healthy again. And be sure to support the indie booksellers who are struggling to survive too. We're all in this together. Let me hear from you at Peter Goodman or at IBPA on Twitter. And I especially like to hear suggestions for topics for future broadcasts. And be sure to check out IBPA at ibpa-online.org. I'm Peter Goodman. Goodbye until next time.